107.9.
Hour here on Praise 107.9, presented by the Jacksonville Urban League and First Thursday Jacksonville. And now, here's your host, Dr. Richard Danforth of the Jacksonville Urban League and Larry Williams of First Thursday Jacksonville.
All right, hey, just in time here. Hey, happy Saturday, everybody, and happy Saturday, Jacksonville. Good morning, Duval. Hey, this is Larry Williams, your co-host, along with Dr. Richard Danford of the Jacksonville Urban League and Jarman Leitner of First Thursday, Jacksonville. And we have in our studio this morning, special guest is City Council Finance Chair Garrett Dennis. So we're going to get right into the mix this morning. We've got a lot to talk about this morning.
Garrett. I see Garrett has on his Florida A&M cap. all those Rattlers out there.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you guys know what about the Rattlers and the what's the other ones out there? That's
Wildcats.
Wildcats. Okay, who's
we
the best?
We don't have to mention those.
See, we're getting territorial already this morning. Well, welcome, Councilmember Dennis, and thanks for coming on, and we're gonna get to you in shortly here. We want to talk about a number of things, and most importantly, I think one of the things we want to talk about is the Jacksonville Urban League's 70th anniversary celebration tonight.
Oh yeah, today, tonight.
Yes, sir.
Big
yes,
night.
Sir. Yes, sir. Everybody's gotten all, you know, I was talking to people all over town, and they're getting their tuxedos out the pawn shop, and
out of pawn shop.
Oh, I was the only one having mine in the pawn shop.
You mean okay. Out of the cleaner. You mean out of the cleaner.
Well, that's about the same way they charge you these days. Right. But I know Jarman and a lot of the other ladies are all dolled up and getting ready for tonight. It's a big occasion. And Doc, congratulations on 70 years of service to the community.
Yeah, I see over there Jarman got a half fixed. I mean, she's got those little curls, got it flipped up, you know, like we used to do it in high school, right? You remember, Larry?
That was a few years ago, Doc, but yeah, I remember that.
Right. Yeah, we are certainly... this evening we're celebrating the Jacksonville Urban League's 70th anniversary at the library.
Okay. That's a different venue, isn't it?
It's a different venue. Why not go to a place of learning?
Absolutely.
You know, maybe some of it will rub off on me. Okay, just go to the library.
Well, Doug,
you know, we talk about literacy.
Yeah, you've been talking about the library all year long.
Oh, yeah, we finally got to the library.
We finally got to the library. We're glad that you are. We're gonna have some fun tonight, though. You know, I know Ms. Finley and the crew over there at the Urban League have been planning this thing for over a year. And you know, they're excited, and we're excited. The board's excited. So, you know, we're going to just come out and have some fun, Doc. Are we going to have some awards or something going on?
Yeah, we've got some awards. We'll talk more about the awardees later.
Okay.
But if there are individuals that are interested in coming.
What's the ticket?
Sure, just show up.
You know, oh, there we go.
Just show up. We'll make it happen.
All right. Just show up, Doc said. Just show up. I've seen all the preparations and things that's going on, so it's going to be a marvelous affair.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to it. As I said, I got my tuxedo out the cleaners, and we all good now, Doc. Did I get a shirt? Oh, okay.
Oh, you got a shirt. What are we going to do? Are we going to talk about the
absolutely
the homicides?
If you must.
If I must.
Go ahead and tell us a little bit about the homicide, Doc. We're going to talk homicides. We also want to talk about the shootings over in Parkland, and
right.
and we're gonna, when we get Councilman Dennis on the air, we're gonna ask him what the city council is doing in working with the schools, the public schools, and making them safer for our children. And you know, there's a lot of things out there, Doc, as you know, and Jarman as well. We've been talking about this off the air all week long about the types of things that the remedies to avoid the another Parkland happening. But you know, we're going to get into that. But Doc, tell us a little bit about, give us what the homicide tracker is saying. Is it back on the, is it back in the paper?
No.
You're doing your own tracking now. Huh?
All of last year, we had the homicide tracker. From the Florida Times Union, and of course, this past year that paper was sold. So apparently they continue to, you know, to change things around. So
okay.
Maybe there is not enough staff to do the homicide tracker now. But just want to refresh our audience memory in terms of what has been happening in Jacksonville. In 2016, we had 120 homicides. And then, of course, this past year, we followed it on a weekly basis, and we ended up with 142.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, you know, we saw about a 10% increase in homicides from 2016 to 2017. Now we're almost in March.
Yes, sir.
And we've had some horrific murders here. Particularly with the 7-year-old kid, Tashawn Gallen, who was shot, you know, drive-by, 7 years old. And, of course, I see in the paper this morning where they've increased the reward by $10,000. So,
yes.
So this is unprecedented, I think, for some of the murders, you know. We just got to do something, and I noticed where the governor on yesterday came out with, you know, his recommendations and the things that he's going to provide in terms of making certain that that you have to be 21 in order to get a machine gun, you know. So, and that's what the AR-15 is.
We talked about that last week. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In terms,
so you have to be 21 instead of 18.
You have to be. Yeah. So currently, you have to be 21 to buy a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
But you can buy 18. You can buy a machine gun. I keep saying machine gun. I'm talking about the AR-15.
Yes. An assault.
Yeah. An assault rifle, you can buy it at 18.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So what we're seeing is the NRA is catching a lot of heat now, and I noticed that a lot of the corporations are pulling
Absolutely.
Back in terms of supporting that organization. And it's interesting from a political point to see how our, you know, elected officials dance around when they're dealing with certainly the Second Amendment and how do you deal with, you know, the guns. And I tell you what, though, I'm really impressed with what the students from Parkland have been about this past week in terms of trying to get the legislature to do something different. And maybe Dennis may want to, you know, respond to that. But it takes a lot to change laws, as we're witnessing.
And
here in Jacksonville, unless you had a plan already worked out.
Right, and obviously there was no plan. Okay, so, you know, as we move forward, and we will talk with bring Councilman Dennis on, but, you know, we really, you know, when we talk about the governor's proposals, and, you know, Doc, one of the things that stirs me about that is that, you know, here we go again throwing money after, you know, and putting a Band-Aid on a broken arm, if you will. I don't think, you know, just personally, I don't think any of the proposals aside from, you know, raising the age is a factor in making a difference in the assault rifles. And also, you know, when we think about the age deal, you know, if you're going to raise the age, why don't you also raise the number of days that you have to, that they have to before they're issued a gun permit? You know, you don't have to wait. You know, we need, you know, folks are asking for 72 hours. Do you need a gun that badly that you can't wait 72 hours to get permitted for? And Jarman, what are we looking at? Steve on time. Okay, so after we're going to talk a little bit more about this, and then we're going to, in the next segment, we're going to bring Councilman Dennis in and have him talk, and we're going to really get into this gun deal. And Doc, we'll bring in and intersperse the awardees and awards as we go through the program.
Sure.
We're going to have some folks calling in, also some sheriff folks that will also chime in on the teacher, arming the teachers. Because I think that's one of the things that has been proposed by our president, and we want to make sure that we address that. I'm really concerned about
that. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean,
welcome to the club.
Teachers have enough to do.
Absolutely.
And worry about.
Absolutely.
Educating our kids.
Yes. Yes.
And to, I mean, come on, man, this is not the wild west.
Not a good mix.
No, and. You know, let's take this break, Steve, and then we'll come back because the skillet is hot again this morning. We thought we fried some fish last week. We're really going to fry some fish this week. So this is the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, the co-host, along with Dr. Richard Danford and Jarman Leitner. And in the studio this morning with us is City Council Finance Chair Garrett Dennis. We'll be back shortly.
Life's thrown many punches, trying hard to knock me out. It's hard, but I'm fighting. Can't let my faith waver now. Change don't always feel good.
to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Do it all.
Hey, welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, your co-host, along with Dr. Richard Danford and Jarman Leitner. And also in the studio, we have Councilman Garrett Dennis. Garrett, welcome to the Empowerment Hour, and thank you for coming in this morning. I know it's early, but you look like a young man who gets up early and gets started on taking care of business in your district every day.
Yes, sir. I've already been up.
All right.
I already ran my five miles.
Oh, I was gonna say I usually do three, but walking, and if you do running five, man, it's wonder if you even made it here. So,
well, he's trying to keep the mayor from catching him.
All right, doctor. trying to
frost him up. Hey, Councilman Dennis, seriously, welcome to the show. And I was serious. Doc was on fire last week, and I guess he's still on fire this morning. So we're gonna. But again, thank you for coming. And we have so much to talk about this morning, Doc. I mean, Garrett, and especially about the things that's going on in the city. And so I want to get started first of all with the schools and the aftermath of the Parkland shootings and murders over there. Has the city and the council started doing or planning anything to make sure that our children are safe in the schools?
Well, actually, that's a very good question, Larry. You know, unfortunately, the school board has their own elected body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what we tend to do is allow that body to make those policy decisions, and then we're a backup to them.
Okay.
And so there is a balance of power, even though we don't see that balance of power a lot in City Hall, but there's a balance of power. and the school board has their own elected body that makes those decisions. However, one of the things that we need to look at on a city level, city council, through the finance committee, we funded additional police officers. But I don't think putting more police officers on the street will solve the problem. I think we need to have more detectives, have more intelligence gathering inside of the police department. That's one of the things I'm planning on talking to the sheriff and undersheriff when they come before the Public Health and Safety Committee about those areas of intelligence, about those areas of detectives. Because, you know, I know we're talking about the Parkland, but, you know, the seven-year-old shot.
Yes.
In the paper it said that the street, that the yard was full of felons.
Right.
Well, how do you know that?
Right.
You know, so
right.
You know,
right.
Did the sheriff's office, miss some intelligence there? Did we not have, undercover? So somebody had to know that the yard was full of felons.
Mm-hmm.
That the house was an activity.
Right.
You know, are we not using our resources effectively to stop the crime?
Absolutely.
Just having police cars roll around town and police officers in uniform. That's not doing it.
Absolutely.
So what's the saying? If you continue to do the same thing over and over and over, it's insanity.
Yes, sir. And you know, you make good points, Councilman Dennis. I tend to think that the police and as you say, riding around in cars. I mean, I think it'd be much more effective policing if the police would get out of their cars and start familiarizing themselves with the neighborhood and with the folks in those neighborhoods, and I think that would, eliminate a lot of that. But, we'll come back to you on that at another time, and especially when you guys have something, you know, tangible that, that we can talk about and put on the table and share. But one of the things that's been really hot on the skillet has been the JEA proposed sale. And I know that Dr. Danford has some things, some concerns about that. I have some, and I know that the council had a special meeting that was called by the mayor, ironically, I guess a week or so ago. And so, you know, we want to talk about that. You know, I think it's a deal where when you're talking about selling JEA, which is now you know, for, you know, being held by the public and make it privatizing it, you know, it takes away a lot of things, especially for those that are poor and disenfranchised. You know, who's going to be the spokespeople for those folks?
You know, that has been the hot topic in the city right now, the proposed sale of JEA. You know, I've said over and over that I don't support the sale of JEA because I think we hadn't asked the question, why should we sell JEA? One of my colleagues said it so eloquently. You know, do you just put your house on the market without asking why am I selling my house?
Absolutely.
And so I think the questions weren't asked and answered prior to moving forward with a with the potential sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing former Mayor Jake Godbo always used to say is that, you know, everyone wants to be on the plane before it takes off. You know, not ask us to join the plane after it's 10,000 feet in the air.
Right.
And I think the public, the council, wasn't on the plane when it took off. So now we're going to have to go back and look at, you know, and ask all these questions. You know, why are we selling? You know, what's the reason? You know,
absolutely.
What's the rationale?
Yes.
And the ratepayers need to weigh in on it.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, the ratepayers, taxpayers, the public own this this utility.
Okay. Doc, what's any thoughts on
the JEA sale?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think the JEA sale is a foregone conclusion.
Wow.
Okay, that's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's in the paper that they've already, you know, hired a consultant to look at selling the JEA, and I would think that in order to, you know, to build everything that everyone is talking about in terms of the shipyards and, you know, the South Bank, we've got all these developments that, I mean, we don't have Better Jacksonville. We don't have the Renaissance Plan. We don't have the funding that we have with all of those projects. So where does the city get the money? You've
right.
got the pension hanging out there that's going to, you know, it's
yes.
before we know it, we're going to have to end up really doing some things
sure.
about the pension. So. JEA is the cash cow. So we're getting, Garrett, 100 and some million every year from the JEA for the city?
About $160 million straight to the general fund, and then we have some franchise fees and a few other fees that we pick up from JEA.
So you sell JEA, you get however many billion up front, then you can divide that with all the developers, and you can do some things and get, you know, get our downtown...
Yeah.
That, you know, where it should be, but that's just my opinion
right.
in terms of I think JEA will be sold. The council will get in step
mm-hmm.
eventually with the plan, but
okay,
we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, I've you know, we've seen so much, and as Councilman Dennis pointed out. You know, it appeared to be such a rush to, you know, push this thing through the council, and, you know, if it's a good deal and if everything is above board, then why the rush to to push it through this council and through the city
and the wave and certainly to waive the purchasing code, which
well,
Councilman Dennis could speak to, if you waive as we did with the Dayless project. then there's not a requirement to have minority participation.
Absolutely.
And we've been talking about the disparity study, and we've been talking about economic development and Northwest Quadrant, et cetera, and getting more minority and women contractors in a position where they can do business with the city, but they keep waiving the, you know, that purchasing code, which then preclude minorities from participating in the process. So maybe we can get the council to do something this year about that disparities that exist in city government.
Well, you know, those are some things. Did you want to respond?
Well, I was going to say, and if JEA is sold to a private company isn't required to have a minority or small business set aside, whereas JEA is required, and we can hold JEA responsible and accountable if they don't. A private company.
But if you waive the purchasing code,
that's right,
et cetera, then
sure,
it's a mood issue.
Absolutely.
That's all.
And I don't know about many minority businesses here, but the ones that I know aren't getting much out of JEA as it is, even with that. So with that being said, we're going to go to a break. This is Praise 107.9 FM, the Empowerment Hour. Dr. Richard Danforth, Jarman Leitner, and Councilman Garrett Dennis in the studio. We're expecting some calls. If you want to call in and chime in on what's going on in the conversation, the number is 296-2251, 904-296-2251. This is the Empowerment Hour. We'll be back after some music.
I believe.
I believe. I believe. I believe. I believe.
Yes, I
Okay, we're back. This is Praise 107.9, the Empowerment Hour. And, you know, we've been in the studio. We're in the studio this morning with Dr. Danford, Jarman Leitner, and Garrett Dennis, Councilman Dennis, the finance chair for the Jacksonville City Council. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the JEA. We've been talking about the Parkland shootings. We've been talking about the Urban League's gala tonight at 7 o'clock, and it's going to be a grand affair. So if you don't have tickets, Dr. Danford said, come on down, and we'll make room for you. You know, but it's a black tie event, so you know, grab your tuxedo and, your, and ladies, get in your, some of your fine dresses, and come on down and join us. We're going to have a ball. I've seen it, the setup being prepared, and I think it's going to be one of the event of the year. So make sure you come down and visit with us. And we got a call on the air. We want to try and take this call. And is this Sheriff? Nope. Okay, who we got on the air here?
Yes, sir. My name is Shirley.
Hi, Shirley. Happy Saturday.
Hi, Shirley.
Hi. Yes, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak, sir. But I have a great concern about at-risk youth. What kind of programs do you have to help the at-risk youth at some of these facilities that have drug-addicted, alcohol-addicted youth?
Okay.
Because the reason why I'm asking is these are our future leaders, and if they don't see people that look just like them
mm-hmm.
come in and show concern, they feel that it is no hope. So I would like to know what kind of what kind of programs or groups that are in Jacksonville that can help at-risk youth and maybe offer some type of services to their families, because a lot of these kids come from broken homes.
Right. So let's let Councilman Dennis respond. And Councilman Dennis?
Yes, very good question. A few months ago, there's a proposal to reform the Jack's Journey and the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Now it's called the Children Hope Alliance. And that organization, funds $36 million on at-risk, and as the administration put out, at-hope youth. Right now they're in the restructuring phase, and you know, as we were building this particular organization, one of the things that I push along with some of my colleagues is diversity matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may have a child come in that's someone would think is acting out, but because of that diversity, I understand, you know, there's a cultural difference. You need that diversity to be able to relate to those kids. And I asked a question during the process, and some eyebrows kind of went up, and what on Thanksgiving, there's something that white Americans have, a staple that they have at their Thanksgiving dinner that African Americans do not have at their Thanksgiving dinner. And so I'm not going to ask that question, but it's mashed potatoes. African Americans, we don't have mashed potatoes at our Thanksgiving dinner,
mm-hmm.
whereas white Americans, they have, that's a staple, they have mashed potatoes.
Why is that?
It's just a cultural difference. And so in saying that, diversity matters. And so as this new Kids Hope Alliance, as they begin to spend money to help at hope kids mm-hmm. or at risk kids, diversity really matters in order to get to the core of of helping our at risk, at hope kids in the city.
And I just wanted to add to that, Dennis. Diversity is important, and also just meeting the child where they are as far as their learning style. Not every child is the same as far as their learning and their behaviors, and we can't be cookie cutter with that. So hopefully some of the programs will also address those challenges, and teachers and therapists will be more individualized with children and their families when they're making plans for the programs to, make some of the changes for the better for the children.
And Doc, do you have any comments on that? I know that you probably do, but one of my comments is that, as Councilman Garrett was talking about the diversity. It also makes a difference if they allow community organizations that aren't in their clique to participate in the funding and helping the kids that are at risk. So, Doc, you want to comment?
Well, I think it's going to be very important that they select someone to head up this Kids Hope Alliance that really understand the needs of the community and the participants. What we've had over the years is consultants helping to determine through different matrices how we should work with at-risk youth. And then what we find is that many traditional organizations receive funding to quote help these individuals, but things aren't working as well as they should. So going forward, we have a new opportunity with the Kids Hope Alliance, and we're hopeful that they will do the right thing and be more inclusive in terms of the participation as well as in terms of the organizations that receive funding that have boots on the ground, people live in these areas. We've got to get the resources down to that level, because you can't sit in an office in Southside and deal with at-risk kids in the Northwest Quadrant. It's not going to work. That's why it's important that we select a superintendent for our school system coming up, okay, that will be able to address the needs of all of our children.
Absolutely.
Particularly where they're suffering.
Yes.
And we know where those areas are. We know those schools. So you know, we've got to get to the meat of the problem. We've got to get on the ground, boots on the ground, where we can deal effectively with some of these issues that we have in these communities.
And Dr. Danford, what I've seen, just the at-risk programs that are there begin with older children, middle school on up to high school, and we're seeing at-risk at a younger age, you know.
Two and three years old.
And we ignore it when they're young, but early intervention is very important, because we can't overlook those behaviors and think that they're going to go away. It just intensifies by the time they reach middle school, so we should have some at-risk programs that target younger children.
Okay, and we have a caller. Caller, good morning. Happy Saturday. Welcome to the Empowerment Hour.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah. Good morning. You have a question?
Oh, yes, sir. I just want, first of all, thank you all for being on and sharing the information that you're sharing.
No worries. Tune in every Saturday morning. We're here.
I know. I listen to you guys when I'm out running around. I know.
Okay.
I wanted to respond to the caller, the young lady that just called. My perspective is that she was asking about organizations that are already active and doing work in the community. And because I am a case manager, the shelter program downtown, I have to stay on top of those things. So if I could just kind of respond to her question and give her some places. I know
okay,
I agree with.
Can you do it quickly? We're running into a time.
Yes. Yeah, so there's Second Mile Ministries, which is right on the corner of Pearl and 8th Street. We have Don't Miss a Beat, which is in downtown Jacksonville. There's a Sanctuary on 8th Street, which is also in the Springfield area. We have Journey into Womanhood, which is an empowerment program for girls. The Strengthening Families Network, Newtown Success Zone, the Boys and Girls Club, the Full Service School. So there's already active organizations, and what we see is that parental involvement is not there and not enough children are attending.
Okay. All right. Well, great.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you for that information.
Yeah. And Steve, do you want to? Okay, we're going to take a break and then we'll be back. This is Praise 107.9 FM. This is the Empowerment Hour. Larry Williams with Dr. Richard Danford, Jarman Leitner, and Councilmember Garrett Dennis. 296-2251 if you want to join in on the conversation.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience.
They that wait shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So on thee I will wait all the day. All the day I'll wait on thee. I'll wait on thee. I will wait all the day.
Welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, your co-host of the Empowerment Hour, along with Dr. Richard Danford of the Urban League, Jarman Leitner, president of First Thursday Jacksonville and Harvest Intervention Services, and councilman and chair of the finance committee over at the Jacksonville City Council. Welcome. And we have a special caller on the phone this morning, and I want to welcome in the sheriff of Burke County, Georgia, Alfonso Williams, and you know, we were talking, Sheriff, about the shootings over in Parkland, and also I wanted to get a perspective about the arming of teachers in the schools, and I know that you have a background as, policing and serving the school district up in Augusta, Georgia, in Richmond County. And congratulations on your election to sheriff of Burke County. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Good. So, Sheriff, you were sharing on Facebook and other social media about the your perspective on arming teachers in the schools. Do you want to share with us a little bit about what your thoughts are as far as that's concerned?
I'm glad to do that. Posted on Facebook on yesterday, having been in law enforcement for 28 years now and having served as chief of police of a school district with 65 schools, 32,000 students, and about 5,000 school employees, I did that for the last 4 years and prior to my election to sheriff here in Burke County. It's a bad idea. It's just not good to consider arming teachers. It's a conversation that probably needs to be had for educational purposes only, just so that we educate the populace about its detriments to police officers who have chosen this career, who are armed, realize that that's a bad idea. Most of us, most police officers, spend their entire careers, 30, 40-year careers, trying to perfect target acquisition, trying to pass a firearms qualification course. Most of us are not good shooters, and that is a big truth. And so we certainly do not need to consider putting firearms in the hands of teachers who have not made a conscious decision to take another person's life. I was director of a police academy for a number of years, and I've taught at a police academy since 1993. And when cadets would come to us, we'd have to make sure they were properly programmed and ready to make a decision in a split second about whether or not they could take another person's life. A teacher who has a nurturing and caring spirit is not programmed that way. They right. don't think about that.
Absolutely.
I worked for the district attorney for 7 years in the Augusta Circuit, which includes Richmond, Burke, and Columbia counties. I've sat on about 8 death penalty trials, and you get this jury pool who would vote who would say during voir dire that I can vote the death penalty if you give me a sufficient amount of evidence. And when it came down to it, a large number of them could not.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. So you can imagine having a teacher who has taught a student, who has a relationship with a student, who knows the family, to then have to stare a person in the eye and pull a trigger and take a child's life. It is not as easy as it sounds. And so other factors to consider are things like in the police academy, we teach what we call weapons retention, where officers would have to partner up and fight for 3 minutes. And no matter what happens in that 3-minute period, you had to retain your weapon. And if your adversary took your weapon, you failed.
Yes.
Imagine a teacher in a lunchroom when a food fight breaks out, having being surrounded by 100, 200, several hundred students, having to worry about retaining that weapon no matter what happens. Her nurturing, caring spirit, or put yourself in a mass shooting situation where you've got a kid who has been shot and is bleeding, and the teacher has to make a decision whether I'm going to go into my nurturing, caring mode, or do I step over that kid and go find the shooter. It's not what they are trained for. It's not what they're programmed to do. It doesn't come natural. imagine an officer having to learn to shoot under stressful conditions, under low light conditions, mm-hmm. Shooting at night, shooting in the dark.
Absolutely.
Those things require over a 30-year career. We are still trying to perfect it.
Okay.
I can't imagine if it's not your chosen profession, if it's not something you have in your heart to do. We keep having these conversations about, well, get prior military folks, get retired military folks. We appreciate their service. We are free because of them. But not every veteran has been on the battlefield. Not every veteran is familiar with firearms. Many of them are familiar with rifles, but not handguns. And so if we're going to put them in schools, they've got to go to the police academy, and they've got to be trained just as we are.
Yes.
Military.
And they can't hide. And if you're in a school, you can't hide from danger.
What a sad commentary with the officer down in Florida who took no action. That is disgraceful. It's atrocious. It's the worst thing that could happen. You're sworn. You have an oath. You have a duty and a responsibility to protect people.
Right.
And for him to not take action certainly gives us all a black eye. But that is not representative of who we are as a profession.
Okay.
The other thing is, you don't find police standing in the middle of crowds when they're armed. A teacher going into a cafeteria or to an assembly with hundreds of students, you don't stand in the middle of them. We don't hug when we're armed. We stay on the outskirts and observe peripherally. we have to have our safe space so that we can react, that we can retain.
Sheriff Williams, look, you've really given us a wealth of information. We're going to bring you back on another time, and I appreciate you calling in, and we need to take care of some other things. But thank you for calling in, and we really appreciate your perspective on arming teachers in our schools. And again, congratulations on your election, and best of blessings to you as you move forward in your career there at Burke County.
Thanks so much. Please have us back on. We appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Praise 107.9 FM, the Empowerment Hour. And before we do any more things, we need to talk about some of the Urban League things that's going on this evening. Dr. Danford, there are going to be some awards handed out. You want to tell us a little bit about what those awards are?
All right, tonight we're going to present several of our Equal Opportunity Awards, and of course this year we have a new category.
Oh, wow.
A special category, and it's our National Urban League Women of Power Award. And so we're fortunate to have two great recipients this evening. The Honorable Anna Broche.
Wow.
Is, she's City Council President. And, of course, Paula Wright is Chair of the School Board. So she will also receive Women of Power Award. Both of these individuals have really proven themselves in terms of their leadership ability, and they are governing in some difficult times.
Absolutely,
and certainly being female, that's another situation where it's somewhat more difficult to lead from what. Well, we live in a man's world, and you understand that. But we recognize.
But it wouldn't be nothing without a woman.
So
any other?
Yeah, we've got two gentlemen. We've got Hallie Williams Bay and Reg Lawrence. These are Vietnam veterans, and they have a long, distinguished history in providing services for veterans in this city, and so we're honored to have them as recipients.
Okay, and are we going to talk about the Whitney?
Yeah, the last one is the Whitney M. Young Leadership Award. Whitney Young, I was president of National Urban League back in the late 60s and 70s. And so our recipient, before you were born, our recipient tonight is is Damian Hazuka.
Oh, good.
Wells Fargo,
absolutely.
A great friend of the Urban League.
Yes.
Here locally as well as national. So
congratulations, Damian.
He's very worthy. So we've got some great candidates, some great recipients tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I want to encourage those that can come out to please join us. It's a celebration.
Good.
We're not going to raise any money, so
we're just celebrating.
We're not doing it for the money. We're doing it to celebrate.
All right.
Because their Urban League has been around 70 years, and I believe personally that. There's quite a bit of good work going on.
Okay, good. We have a couple of callers. We're going to try to get to them before we get out of here this morning. Good morning, caller. Make it quick. Welcome to the Empowerment Hour.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Just going to be brief for Mr. Garrett Dennis.
Yes, sir.
I would just like to thank him for being one of the few black men with a backbone in that politics game. That guy there. He stands up, and that's what we need. We just had 1,000 more like him, not even 1,000, a few more in Jacksonville, Florida.
Uh-huh.
He ain't scared of white folks. Some of them people are scared, but Mr. Dennis ain't scared. All he ain't
right.
Like that Warren Jones guy.
We don't want to do no bad. But it's good to know that we don't. All of our council members aren't spaghetti back. So thank you for that call, and Councilman Dennis, appreciate Dennis. We're going to have one more call, so let's have that caller. You're on the air. Okay, 1 minute. Okay, we're good. Okay. Okay, we're gonna. You want to share your mic? I mean, your earphones. We're gonna have Councilman Dennis responding into the caller, thanking him for. Do we have a caller? Okay, good. So, Councilman Dennis, you were being applauded for your efforts of having backbone and one of the few that has on the city council.
Well, I definitely want to thank that caller. If you look at it, there's almost a million people in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. but there's only 19 members on the council.
Right.
And so for me, I don't take it lightly. I don't take it for granted. I take it an honor to be able to serve. And I just try to stand for what's right. I'm not looking to the